Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey friends, have you noticed that no matter how much yoga we do, we may still struggle in our intimate relationships? My husband and I have a great relationship, but we are not relationship coaches. And we know that yoga can and does help, but at a certain point, you need more relational support from a relationship specialist. If you're going through some kind of challenge right now in your relationships, my friend Jason Gaddis at the Relationship School can help. Jason's team will pair you up with a skilled relationship coach, and within 48 hours, you'll be getting private one-on-one support on whatever you're going through relationally. And right now, for my listeners only, Jason is offering half off 1 month of relationship coaching. Head over to relationshipschool.com/Laura to get the deal and watch your relationships improve. Good movement, and welcome to Redefining Yoga, a lit yoga podcast, which is designed to investigate all aspects of the modern evolution of yoga from my background as a physical therapist and lover of movement. My mission is to help everyone find freedom through smarter and safer movement patterns, so together we can be uplifted, benefiting all beings. Welcome to Friday with Friends. Oh, I have to tell you, I have like a physical therapy colleague crush on today's guest. And I just interviewed him for the first time. Jay DeCherry, he is a physical therapist. He is a certified sports clinical specialist. He is an author of two books. He is a engineer of a really cool patent MOBO board, it's called. It's kind of crazy how talented he is. And he is also incredibly humble. I loved talking to him. He not only speaks my language, but he really breaks down the importance of biomechanics and running, the importance of the foot, the importance of the big toe, and gives you some real practical ways to help your movement, whether you're doing it for 5 minutes or you're running for 5 hours. Even if you're not a runner, we talk about so much more. And he is just absolutely delightful. He has been an active researcher with publications of over 35 professional journal articles. There's so much more to say about him, but just listen up and enjoy my conversation with Jay. Welcome, Jay. So happy to have another physical therapist, movement lover, guru that you are on today.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's great to be here. Love chatting about bodies and how to make them work better.
I know. I love it. And let me just mention, in addition to being a physical therapist, you are an educator, you are an author, you are an inventor. I mean, you have a lot of things going on. So I really would love to start off and learn about how you got into this line of work.
Yeah, everything I've done has been born out of frustrations with things that don't work right. I ended up not working when I was a long time ago in high school. I was a swimmer, and you know, as a swimmer, you spend lots of time training and lots. It was in the water for 20 to 25 hours a week from the age of 7 on. And you become this tremendously, dangerously strong engine, and you are horrendously weak in terms of ability to stabilize against, like, you know, ground sports. I was sort of forced to run in high school. I didn't want to at all, but I was forced because I was fit, right? And I showed up. I was quite, you know, decently fast, but I kept getting hurt. And I didn't like the fact that, you know, it's, you know, 13, 14, 15, 16 years old and kept getting these overuse injuries and training 25 hours a week. And all the physicians you'd see would be like, oh, well, running's bad for you. You shouldn't do this. And I just didn't like that answer. So, tried to, long story short, did a bunch of weird stuff right about, but became a PT and then ended up working for an outpatient sport and spine clinic and found out that a bunch of stuff we learned in school didn't work. Went back to the drawing board, ended up running a biomechanics lab at University of Virginia for over 10 years. And that's when it was really cool. A lot of things started to come up to the surface when you actually get to, you know, I always tell people my career has been kind of like cheating. If you had like lab data on every patient you see, plus your, you know, evaluation, it's like stuff's really easy to find out. I think a lot of what I've learned over the years is trying to give that back. Right. So I was raised in a family which said you're never good enough, you can always do better. So trying to do better and trying to spread good word around our community. So yeah,
chasing that proverbial yes, you did a great job, Jay. No, that's wonderful, because I think what we know anytime you're doing this kind of service work that we love so much is that we get so much more in return when you're helping somebody.
Totally. Yeah,
I would love to go back, because this just like kind of the minute you started talking about swimming and how you weren't prepared for running. And I feel like there's a thread line here, because correct me if I'm wrong, but going back to like swimming versus running, going into PT school, realizing actually what we learned in PT school doesn't always apply, and then going into biomechanics. Would you say that the thread line here is that people don't pay enough attention to the proximal postural muscles and their need to stabilize to function well in any kind of big movement pattern, whether it's in the water? Because I've worked with a lot of swimmers who have their big muscles are working well and their proximal muscles aren't. But would you say there's a little bit of a thread line there?
100%. I mean, yeah, it's like there's certain foundational skills that we need to happen, right? And like this should start, I mean, we can get a big soapbox, Laura, if you want.
Oh,
but like,
I'm right there with you. Why aren't we teaching this to kids, right?
Yeah, this should start.
Once you get off the ground and you're not crawling anymore, I think it's a downhill slope.
Totally.
And yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this should, you know, PE shouldn't be dodgeball, right? PE should be fun ways that are age-appropriate spectrum, right, to really build lifelong skill. Not just everybody talks about strength. Yes, strength's important, but like to build skills. And we've lost sight of that as an entire culture. And that's what's, so you said common thread. That common thread is unfortunately going to start brewing really early, right? It's never getting fixed till people have ouches, right? And so it's funny to me, it's like, you know, the reality is people won't take effort to improve their bodies unless they're hurt, right? And then you get the other side, which is like, oh, I'm doing fine. I'm kind of getting along what I'm doing. I'm like, yeah, you are, but you could probably be doing a whole heck of a lot better if you take, you know, 20 steps back and reinvent the wheel. And everybody wants the one exercise to do to fix it. You know, it's there. That doesn't exist, right? That's why people train for years to get good at things, not just one day. So it's it's an interesting time.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you have done the similar thing that I did, is that you saw that working in a clinic, and again, this is not to diss the clinic work or anything like that, but it is like when your intention is to help people, and a huge part of physical therapy, I believe, is education, we are reduced to kind of just rote exercises that we have to give for the sake of time, for the sake of insurance, and it is such a disservice that we're not given this, like, kind of blank slate, like, what do you see, how would, and knowing, yes, like you said, it's not a quick fix, but then we would be conditioning the people to realize it's not a quick fix versus getting into this mentality of something's wrong, you go fix it, you write a prescription, and you get 4 to 6 things, and if that doesn't work, take a pill. And it's like, we have just got to flip this whole, you know, we don't have to, I know you believe the same thing I do, but it is to everybody listening, it's so important to realize this is a lifelong pursuit to move better. You're never going to get it. And so let's just start with the basics. Like, you got into running. You wrote a whole book about Running Rewired. This obviously came from your gait analysis. Why, for people that are listening, gait is how you move, how you walk on 2 feet, bipedal. What are the common, I guess, gait patterns that are not helping people optimize their movement, not just in walking, but you know, translating into other movement patterns? What do you typically see, or what have you seen?
Yeah, let me just say this too. It's like, you know, it's funny to me. Like everything is the whole sport of running, almost everything we do, right, is a very quantitative based culture, right? How much do you run? How fast? You know, what was your time? It's all people ask about, whether it's running or cycling or rowing or swimming, whatever, right? And so what we've lost sense of is the quality, right? So the question you're asking is like, what type of quality things have risen to the surface? I think there's a bunch of them, right? We talked, but I think if we highlight two today, which are really, really important, one is postural control. And the second is rotational control. And so let's hit each one of these because it's really important. And I know there's a bunch of people who say, oh, it's not one good posture for everybody. And yeah, I know that. That's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying you have to run with upright military position. That's not what we're saying at all. The reality is, you know, when you run, you actually do move, right? You have to counter rotate your upper body and your lower body, and you've got some motion, you know, front to back of your pelvis and side to side and rotation, right? And running's dynamic. It's not just swinging your legs. There's other things that happen. And so, you know, a lot of times what we lose sight of is the fact that runners fatigue, right? You don't look the same at 1K as you do at 5K and 50K, right? So, you know, I always tell people, look, we're going to work backwards. If you come to me and you tell me that you're going to do a marathon, I need to make sure you have the posture control to run 26.2 miles, not a 5K, right? And so your mind is blown. Why do you have this extra work? I'm like, look, this isn't extra work. This is integral work. It's complementary, which this isn't cross training, right? I'm trying to give you things that might prepare you for your goal. You said your goal is to run a marathon. I'm just an enabler to help you hit that. That's my only place at the table, right? So I want to make sure that we really train the awareness of where your upper body, where your torso is over your pelvis, right? And it's supposed to move. There's not one posture, but for you, if I can teach you how to feel your alignment and shut my mouth, you'll learn, right? And if you learn, that's when things translate over. I know there's 5,000 core exercises you can find online. I'm not looking to give you an exercise. I'm looking to teach you a strategy, right? And so that's one that's really, really, really important. And to be blunt, Laura, it's not very well understood in the research either, right? So
I mean, I love research, but we are not in, you know, research is subjective, first of all. Research is usually catching up with what we know far before that. So, yeah.
Yeah. I tell people all the time, research guides your thought process. It doesn't tell you how to treat your patients. It's funny. I was asked to do a conference presentation years ago. I co-founded a conference at UVA called Running Medicine Conference. It's like, I don't know, 18th or 19th year this year. Anyway, on influence of upper body mechanics and running, and there's really not that much out there, right? And so I said, okay, look, I'm gonna do my little pilot study. And so I basically had a bunch of runners come in. I said, just run, right? Now I want you to run with kind of a slump position and then an arch back position for a little while, right? And just by doing that, like no exercise, no nothing, right? Just by doing that, we found that we can make running harder, okay, from a fitness standpoint. Or you could make running more stressful. You could overload your body parts more just by cheating your running position. And people are like, oh, well, you artificially created that. And I was like, nope, those are the exact patterns we see every day. Just go look outside, you know, and you'll see people running like this all the time. So a lot of it's the skill, right? So I think that's one huge piece is pay attention to your running posture, find some awareness in that. And that's so, so critical.
Right. So can you just pause there? So when people are listening and they're like, well, besides going to somebody, like, what should I be aware of? Like, is there an intrinsic or extrinsic cue that you ask people? Say they're just running pretty much on a level surface, no major hills at this point. What are the things to think about?
Yeah, I can make this really simple. So if those of you who listen to this and you can stand up. Okay. And what I want you to do for me to do a little awareness exercise. I want you to put your right hand on your belly button. I want you to put your left hand on your chest, on your sternum, okay, in front of you. And a lot of times people talk about posture. They try and tuck the pelvis or tuck the tailbone. That's not what we're doing. In fact, please don't do that, because if you tuck the tailbone, what you're doing is you're actually using your hip extension range and you can't stride out behind you. So good luck running, right? So don't change from the bottom. We're going to think about the top, right? So what I want you to do with your right hand, your belly button, and your left hand, your chest, and just relax, just wiggle yourself for a second so you can relax and just feel where you are on your feet. Some of you out there right now will be in a pretty good position and you can feel this. This isn't something I have to look at or measure. If you're in front of me, I do this the same way, right? If you feel like your weight's evenly split between the heels and the balls of your feet, you're right now in your sort of neutral alignment, okay? The reality is most of you listening right now are going to feel very heel heavy, right? You're going to feel a lot of weight on your heels. And the reason why is because we tend to stand with our pelvis kind of in that anteriorly tilted position or kind of forward rotated position and an increased arch in our low back. And that's what your body thinks is normal. So when you walk and yes, run, right? All you're doing is throwing volume at the same postural problem you've got to begin with. You can't feel where you are in space. So that's some people, like the backseaters, what I call those, right? And then the other aspect is sometimes people just tend to kind of slump forward and they kind of roll their shoulders forward, they roll their neck forward because we spend all of our time texting and at desks all day long, right? And so again, that position becomes one we adopt when we run because it's familiar, right? So what we're gonna do is we're gonna play with this little thing. We're gonna keep our right hand, our pelvis nice and stable, that left hand, your chest. I want you to lean back. So even if you're not somebody who feels heel heavy, I want you to lean back with me so you do feel this. And you're gonna lean backwards just enough to the point you feel weight in your heels. And then we're gonna take our left hand, our chest, and we're gonna drop those forward in space until you feel weight evenly split between your heels and your ball of your foot. And that should feel evenly balanced. And then let's go too far now. So drop your chest down even a little bit more and you feel that weight really go on your toes. And you may even feel your toes go dig to the ground. Back that off and go back to that neutral position. Now what I want you to do, I want you to take your pinkies and I want you to put your pinky on the front of your pelvis, a spot called your anterior superior iliac spine. You don't have to remember that. Just think the bump in the front of your pelvis, okay? And now I want you to take your thumb, right? So pinky is on the front of the pelvis. Your thumb goes on any rib. Just reach up to any rib you can find and just kind of clamp down on it. And imagine your hand is now a vise, right? It's a rigid object. And what I want you to do for me is keeping your torso, as use it as a cue, right? To keep your torso stacked over your hips. Go walk around, walk to your kitchen, walk to your backyard. I don't care, walk somewhere, right? And just feel that awareness of your torso moving forward with your pelvis at the same time, right? And not what we do a lot of people do is the second the heel comes down, right? The heel strikes the ground and they let the pelvis kind of break position, right? It rotates forward, the back arches and they shift. And so all the sloppy control, just think about that alignment and do this a bunch of times throughout the day, right? Can begin taking a break at lunch, can be walking to get your kids, whatever it is, but just do this often. And you're just building the habit of upper body stacked in the lower body. That's all, right? And so if you can learn that, it is huge. And like huge. You can do this when you run if you want to, but just, and if you want to stop during your run, your heart's not going to drop that much. Walk for 10 seconds, right? And just put this awareness in your pattern. It's super, super helpful.
I love that. That's exactly, you're speaking my language because I talk so much about the thoracopelvic cylinder. In a lot of ways, what our limbs are doing is way less important. It's because, especially like on the mat, if you're not controlling the center, it doesn't really matter because then it shows up in all the other ways. And but yeah, you're totally speaking my language. And it's funny because we in Lit, we talk about the diamond where we put the heel of the hand on the ASAS's the pinky kind of down toward the pubic bone, thumb up toward above the navel. So it's like a diamond and just cinching that together to control it. Because it's that connection, the rib, those front ribs that are, I also call them the curtains because of they don't attach to the sternum. They really get, free range and they'll just move and they move in a result of the pelvis. And like you said, if you can control from the top down, it's just another way of, it's kind of like a side door again, and the brain pays more attention to it because it's not such a, it's a refreshing new way of feeling it and looking at it versus just, like you said, overly tucking the pelvis, thinking that you're trying to get into neutral.
Totally.
Great advice. Okay. You said there was a second thing besides that.
Yeah. So, you know, this is interesting, right? So running is moving forward, right? And so over the past few years, we've heard lots of people say, let's talk about strengthening the hip abductors and the frontal plane muscles. And yeah, great. Okay, let's do that. But you know what's more important than strengthening the frontal plane is the transverse plane, the rotational plane. And let me just give you an example of again, when you run, you have to counter-rotate your shoulders on your pelvis through your spine. You have to counter-rotate your pelvis on your thigh. You have to counter-rotate your shin on top of your foot. And you have a ton of rotation that occurs within your foot, which is we call pronation, supination. Don't let those words scare you. It's just basically rotation of your rear foot and your forefoot. And so that's what I spend the vast majority of time, right? We talk about, you know, how do you really fix things with runners? It's not this funnel plane stuff. Like, I know a lot of you out there have seen a picture of yourself coming across the finish line. If you're a clinician, your patients bring it in and they show you that, you know, their knee diving in right to the inside that we call dynamic valgus. What you see visually, okay, with your eyes from a front picture is a frontal plane problem. I get that. You see the knee crashing inside, but the hip is not coming across the body. We call this adduction. Your hip isn't adducting 25 degrees, right? We've done research on this and looked at people who do have dynamic valgus running and don't, right? And the frontal plane values are within like 1 to 2 degrees. What we see huge increases though is hip rotation, okay? And then lower limb rotation, right? So I spent a lot of my time trying to teach people how to think about, you know, your foot tied to the ground, that ground reaction force, the line of stress goes up from the foot up the entire kinematic chain. So we have to assess everything up the kinematic chain. How can you steer and stabilize your rear foot on your forefoot? How do you stabilize your shin over your ankle? How do you stabilize, and these are all rotational ideas, right? How do you stabilize rotation of your pelvis on your femur? How do you stabilize your torso on your pelvis? And then more importantly, how do you get that all to work together?
Yeah.
Right? Like, you're not a body part, you're a person, right? And so that's what I think, it's funny, right? We're on the older side. We've seen trends comes and go, right? And so it's funny. People do this and do that. It's like we're missing the problem, right? The problem is think about what we have to focus on. It's not the quick fixes. It's you've got to deal with rotational stresses. Let's prepare the body for that. And that gets overlooked so often.
So just if you were to – I know this. Like you said, there's so many components there. But if you were to kind of summarize it to somebody listening, would you say something like it's basically having an element of, I don't want to say deceleration, but control of, because when he's talking about this rotation, there's an allowance that you want to have, but you don't want too much, right? You don't want it out of control. It's to allow the natural gait pattern. But would you say there's got to be kind of this, like I talk about this kind of energetic hug in, and then everything can move well around that. But if that center like lift of the kind of pelvic contents up and this sense of like going against gravitational forces, if you don't have that, then you just become spaghetti-like. What are some of the cues that you give people to have in mind as they're moving slowly and then picking up the pace? It's actually easier in some ways as you're picking up the pace because you have some natural kind of coil going on, but you still have to contain it.
Yeah. Let's even back up one step here. So I will definitely get the cues because those are really helpful, but let's do something because I think everybody in your audience has done a bridge before, right? So let's see.
Oh, yeah. We do them all the time. Right. Every single class. Yeah.
Yep. Let's even make this simpler, right? So a bridge, you're basically lying down your back, right? You're taking your hip from a flex position to more of a neutral position, right? And the goal is you don't cheat your back. You're supposed to move your hip, right? So everybody's done that before and you're moving your hip from flexion to neutral. Great. So then you've probably done a single leg bridge at some point in time, right? Where basically we're now asking you to move your hip from flexion to extension, but we're also, because it's single limb, right? Your leg is slightly to the side of midline. And so now you have a little bit of rotational control. What most people wind up doing, right? We say bridge up. They wind up where people don't have proper hip strength, right? Their pelvis, when they go up into that bridge position, the high position, right? Their pelvis tends to twist and rotate downward, right? And so that motion isn't bad. I want you to be able to twist, right, to exponential rotate, but I need you to control that, right? So one of the tests I have people do all the time is when I actually assess a single leg bridge, right? And so I'll say, go into a single leg bridge for me. And I want to see them maintain level, but I'll say, let your pelvis go into external rotation, right? Let the opposite side of your pelvis rotate down. And then now without changing the height of your pelvis, right? Without bridging up higher from your hip, I now want you to actually actively internally rotate your hip, right? So I'm taking them through that range of active control of internal and external rotation. Why? Well, because when you run, you have to be able to what? Actively control that motion. And so one of the problems I see is when you talk about cues, and I love cues, but we give people cues when they don't know how to move, right? So the simplest way I can explain this, because this is just an easy one to visualize, if you have really poor control of your hip extension, right? Because running is swinging your leg in front of you and then back behind you. The reality is most people don't have good control of their hip when it goes behind midline. What happens is instead of extending their hip, they wind up extending their low back, right? And then some coach with well-meaning is going to tell you to open up your stride, right? And open up your stride means let your leg swing longer. And that's not a bad cue, okay, at the right times, but you heard open up your stride, and what you, all your brain knows how to do is to cheat your back position to open up that stride, right? And that's not the goal. So I really dig on cues, yes, but I want to make sure people know how to move first. And so I spend time, you know, on these kind of fundamentals, right? Teaching you how to, again, get active rotation control on your hip, how to get counter rotation upper body, lower body, how to steer your rear foot and your forefoot, how to drive down through your big toe, your first ray, right? So you can create that foundation. Like, we have to spend time doing these, and they don't, you know, these aren't things you have to work on for every day for an hour, right? They're things that take, you know, a few minutes. Like, you know, I tell people all the time, if you're doing this more than like 10 minutes a day, 3 days a week, like, we need to have a talk, right? This is real simple stuff. And if you're still doing this in a month, we have a bigger problem, right? Like,
it's almost like you're prepping the neuromuscular connections in that totally. 10 minutes. It's not like you're just, yeah.
Totally. Yeah. So we're talking about building blocks, right? We start somewhere, and then again, eventually we'll integrate these skills into bigger type things, right? And then so when you hear that cue, right, when I say drive your elbows back behind your hips, right, which is basically preventing you from slumping your shoulders forward, right, and then having more cross body rotation, okay, that you know now, oh, the difference between my shoulder blade position and my spine position. Those are two very different segments of your body we're talking about, right? And driving your elbows back actually helps you work on your propulsion mechanics, right? And gives you actually better spring. As you talk about coil, right? Running's all about elasticity. So we can improve these things, right? So I think that one of the biggest things is, you know, I tell people all the time, when you're running, do me a favor, stop every half mile, quarter mile, whatever you need to. And just again, stand on one leg and go, wait a second, am I on my heels? Am I on my midfoot or on my toes, right? And just recenter yourself, keep on going, right? Jump back into your workout and do that as often as you need to until better position feels like home. Right? That's one great thing. And then the elbows behind hips cue is, again, another really simple one, right? Another use all the time is pretend your kneecaps are flashlights, right? So you have a yellow flashlight in your left kneecap and a blue flashlight on your right, right? And don't cross your beams and make green, right? For those of you who have like wobbly mess stuff, right? Because we want to focus on the twist. And a lot of people say, you know, run with your knees apart. And then we have people just like, you know, wide, like,
yes.
So, you know, it's all about that. Excuse me. It's all about that spiral control that really focusing on.
I love that. And I always like reference, like, if you want to watch this in action, like, watch the elite marathoners. I mean, they are just magnificent. And it looks effortless, but they have that beautiful thoracopelvic cylinder control. They have the rotation component. And you just don't see, every once in a while, there'll have been kind of a wild card, the outlier who is doing all this kind of extra arm stuff. But most of them are just, it's amazing. They're really centered over their center of mass is right underneath them. And it's incredible to watch. It really is.
And you hit me on the head there. You said their arms may do this thing again. The arms are the problem, right? So the arms may be doing something interesting, but like, as long as they can keep those two body parts, right, that keep the cylinder stacked, we're in a good spot. So,
yeah. I know, you know, the ones I've talked about that do this like funny little thing, but everything else looks fine. And it's like, that's just their like hallmark move, but it works. It works. Okay. So
let me say one thing.
Please.
It's important too. I will tell you this, and I've worked with a lot of elites, okay? And I will tell you this, those of you who look at somebody, you know, on the podium and go, oh, they must be perfect, I will tell you right now, I have seen lots of elites who have really, they're always riding the tightrope of getting injured, okay? Always, because their mechanics aren't good, right? And they have insane physiological capacity, right, from genetics and training hard, but they're not very skilled in their control. So don't let that be the gold standard you're striving for, right? So take time to work on you, right? I've seen parents with four kids who have amazing mechanics, right? And they just don't have the talent and don't have time to train for 30 hours a week, right? So realize there's a difference
between behind the scenes. Well, yeah. I'm curious. I'm sure you've read Born to Run. Though the people that are running that like 20 miles a day, 20, 25 miles a day, just to, you know, in their life to gather whatever they need to travel, they're doing this for life. They're not getting injured. So what is it? Is it that they've been doing this for so long? It's the mechanics were never lost to begin with. Their connection was so good. Do you have any idea?
I do. And again, it goes back to lifestyle, right? I mean, they're using running as transportation, right?
Yes.
It is literally part of how they get from village to village, how they harvest crops, how they get food. Like, it's different. They're carrying loads when they're doing things, right? Like they're not, we sit at a computer and watch Netflix and then expect to go run perfectly. And that's not how life works, right? So, yes. You know, I tell people, you don't have a running problem. You have a lifestyle skill problem that you're just overloading with volume. That's, running's not why you're here, right? You're here because there's other stuff that you've allowed to creep into your life. And I tell people all the time, like, are we born to run? I think we're adapted to run, right? I think if you do things routinely, which build the skill control, you can do whatever you want, right? But if you don't, good luck.
So in an ideal world, even for people that aren't running, in terms of movement, how much movement, and it could be walking, it could be, you know, doing yard work, it could, like, you know, similar to people who are doing this as their lifestyle, like you said, as part of their lifestyle. I mean, what would you say if everything was a perfect world and we didn't have to be on a computer? Like, how much movement do you think is ideal for longevity, for continuing this biomechanical goal of, you know, optimizing energy? I think of all these things as not necessarily getting a trophy, as, you know, only a few athletes are going to do, but more like, I want to feel good. I want to wake up feeling refreshed and not feeling sore and achy and needing like an hour to kind of realign. So what would you, I'm just curious what your opinion about that is, yeah, with your research.
It's a hard question to ask, right? Because it's like, there's like the general answer for the masses, which is, you know, please get off the couch and do something, right? But then there's the reality of, okay, well, I played collegiate tennis, right? Like, so there's a very asymmetric sport with the asymmetric demands. So I think that the thing is, like, do things that have a lot of variety and do them often, right? And I think that that's the big thing. It's like, yes, I love people just, you know, if you're doing nothing, then please just start to walk 1K every day. Just start, you know, find a barrier of entry that lets you do something and feel accomplished, and hopefully that'll build. But, you know, if you're already off the couch and doing different things, like, I find that, again, like we talked about, getting out of that frontal, you know, getting out of that front to back motion all the time, learning to put some rotational skill work in, learning to put some load in your system, right? Learning to find and feel positions, right? I think that we live in a world where we want things done to us, right? I'm sorry if I'm bashing people, but we have this new business in town. It's a stretch lab. You walk in, these people, they stretch you passively. I'm like, are you serious? Like, I know people pay for this, but again, like, that's not how your nervous system learns better movement. Like, it's ridiculous. So, you know, we need to spend time, you know, do different things more, right? Do different things often. And again, that needs to start from school, right? And that needs to be carried out. And, you know, and I always tell people, like, I've worked with over 50 Olympians in my career, and they do a lot of different stuff. They don't just do their one sport. Like, they do a lot of different things, and some of it's mental rest throughout the year, some of it's complementary skill development, right? But like, they know that they're in this for the long haul, and it's like, their body's important, their mind-body connection is important. So they take time to build that even outside of their sport. And you should too.
And I really like, I use that term a lot too, a movement variability. I think when people think cross training, it can overwhelm the system. Like, oh my God, it just move in different ways. Like, make sure that you're moving your joints in as many ways as they're made to move, because they, you know, if you, it is that whole, you know, idea of if you don't lose it or use it, you are going to lose it. And what you're losing is range of motion, elasticity, like we were talking about. And it's great for your brain as well. I would also, okay, on this note, I would love to hear about the feet, because I know you've become a foot expert. Was that just by happenstance, because the feet are so often neglected, and yet then when we pay attention to them, we realize how incredibly important they are, especially because we're only most of the time standing on 2 feet, and like somehow we just ignore them.
Yeah, so it's a great, so again, it's born out of frustration, right? So, you know, when you, two things, this, right? You walk into any PT clinic, things have gotten a little better the past few years, but, you know, the standard of care, even like 5 years ago, you walked into any clinic and they're doing, you know, towel curls, mobile pickups, and TheraBand sweeps. And I'm like, okay, like if you just got out of a boot, there might be a chance to do that for a few days. But like, if that's your standard of care, I'm not optimistic for the future, right? You know, the reality is, again, when you run, you've got 2.5 times load in your body every stride, right? If you're a sprinter, you've got 5 to 6 times your stride, right? Your kids playing soccer had this every time they start, cut, run, and jump. And like, do you think that picking up, you know, a marble with your toes is going to prepare your body for that? And in fact, you're actually teaching the wrong strategy, by the way, doing that. You're actually training over dominance of your long flexors, which are muscles in the shin, not the feet, right? So, again, I'm a data dork, right? I have a research lab. I have data to show how people respond and how the foot moves. I've done research on foot mechanics and trying to, you know, again, find like what's coming to the surface, right, in terms of all this research. And so, you know, one of the things we have this thing, I'm trying to keep it so simple, but we have this thing called the center of pressure path, right? So those of you probably seen this out there in some marketing materials, different companies, they'll show like a hot spot under the heel or a hot spot under the forefoot or something like, right? But, you know, when you walk or run, you know, your foot hits the ground. And so the forces go from the heel, right, the outside of the foot, along the outside of the foot, and they should cross over under the ball of the foot, the metatarsal heads, and come out through your big toe, through your first ray. And it's interesting, you know, your big toe is very, very different, both neurologically and from an architecture standpoint. So let's go this real quick. If you look at your hands, everyone, just kind of wiggle your fingers back and forth. You have two joints, right, in each finger. You have three bones in each finger, and your thumb, right, you have two joints and you have two bones, right? So it's a different type of anatomy, right? And your foot's the same way, right? So your foot has two bones in the big toe and three bones, little toes. And you look at all the research, you know, on anthropology stuff, right? We were, you know, our little toes are designed to curl around and grasp and curl, right? And that's very different than the big toe. Big toe's job is to drive down, provide stability, right? And you even have two tiny little kneecaps. They're called sesamoid bones, right? But they're underneath your big toe to drive down and increase the leverage your big toe can create, because it's so, so critical for stability. And so that's, you know, architecturally, you're different in your big toe versus your little toes, right? And the reason why is, again, that center pressure line has to get out the outside of the foot, across the big toes, and out the first ray. And then from a neurological standpoint, we have a separate area of our brain for different functions, right? And you have an area of your brain called your homunculus, right? An area in there, it's just dedicated to big toe function. Like, that's how important it is, right? But the reality is we just put socks on and put our shoes on and go, right? Or let's say we do something like yoga, right? And we work on balance. Well, the reality is balance is like a mass amalgamation of how you compensate, right? Like, balance work is stand on one leg and see what happens. You may shift from your hips, you may shift from your torso, you may lean from your trunk. I don't know. Like, and you may not quote fall over, but that's not a better strategy, right? So my goal in looking at foot mechanics is, how do we teach people, again, not just strength, but how do we train better strategies of foot control, so that when you do have the foot on the ground, right, that's a solid controlled segment. And then everything upstream can work with the foot, right, to control that spiral line we talked about earlier. So it's about really thinking about how anatomy your foot's designed, and then, you know, building tools and knowledge and techniques to build upon that.
Amazing. All right. So I know this is a lot to ask, but, you know, because we don't want cookie cutter or like do this in 5 minutes. But what are some exercises or movements or tips you can give for people? And this is for anybody, people who are kind of wanting to keep their foot and especially their big toe in good health, or those who are already experiencing some of the impacts of the hallux valgus, maybe even a little rigidus, getting into a bunion type situation. What are some tips that you would give?
For sure. I've been a big proponent for 20 years now, toe yoga exercises, right? Where you're separating out your big toe from lesser toes. I'm teaching this since way before the foot was cool. But that's just, again, because you've got an area of your brain which is dedicated to your big toe, not little toes, right? So you have to be aware of that. But I put articles on that and videos, everybody has, right? It's all over social media. But here's one that's really helpful, right? So I call this a pass around exercise. So what I want you to do, if you have a little 5-pound weight, it's great. But if you don't, just get a gallon of water or just something. Like, you just need like maybe 5-6 pounds is plenty, right? But you're going to stand on one foot. And again, this is a little teaching test too. A lot of people, when you stand on one foot, we tend to do what I call be very reactive, right? We tend to just, quote, balance, like literally like wobbling on the outside of the foot. That's reactive. That's not proactive, right? And you have some people who actually do get kind of, they feel like their balance points evenly across the foot. They just kind of collapse inside and they fall down because they can't stabilize their big toe, right? So this little exercise is great because it teaches you some awareness, right? So what I want you to do is stand on one leg and then try and center your foot as best you can, all right? And then take that weight that's in your hand, just pass that from your left hand to your right hand, and then back of your right hand and back to your left hand. All you're doing is using that little bit of weight to kind of just shift loads from inside to outside of foot. And you'll feel the fact that a lot of you out there are really going to want to just rock out to that side and wobble. And don't do that. I want you to get pressure, get load underneath the inside of your big toe. And I want your big toe to do a good job to drive down and just practice. Don't worry about reps. Just go for time. Go 2 minutes. Okay. And just, you'll feel this connection of like where this is supposed to be. Right. And it's super helpful just building some like awareness of like, okay, I can balance. And a lot of times you do things for balance, but they can be really too hard, right, to build skill. So taking things back and regressing them to something really simple. Like, can I just shift a weight back and forth across my body and still keep some awareness of where my pressure is, my foot, what am I feeling? I have a whole, I don't want to make this.
I love that. Yeah. You have more, I'm sure.
Yeah. But if you want to see a video of this, go to, this is a different thing. I made a little product called Mobo Board, but look at the Mobo Board site. There's a video of this with the Mobo. You can do it without the Mobo too, right? Just if you want to see what this looks like, but it's real simple. Just pass back and forth and just get that connection down. It's so, so critical. So important so that when you do go into like tree pose, right, you can check in. Okay, wait a second. Instead of just kind of letting my hip kind of shift out to the outside because my outside of my foot and quote balancing, right, and hopefully grab air to keep myself stable, you can take one extra second, set the whole foot down flat, drive down through a big toe, get that solid from the floor, and then build things up, right? And then you move. And then it's like we've got that stability system in place. You're just building that skill.
I love that. And do you feel like when you're, again, not to, you know, I'm sure one cue doesn't fit all, but if somebody's thinking, well, I'm not going out to the outside, but I'm not sure what he means by like getting centered, is there a way of thinking like big toe, pinky toe mound, heel? Like I think of the tripod, that's what I reference, but is there another way of a way of kind of feeling that centered action?
Yes, there is. So I use tripod all the time, but for some reason, my tripod is different than everyone else's. Everyone else out there talks about tripod as heel, outside ball of foot, inside ball of foot. And that's actually not at all what my tripod consists of. And the reason why is, yes, if you're doing like a full body single leg pose in yoga, your whole foot's in the ground. But when you walk, run, jump, cut, like your foot's never static. You don't have your whole foot in the ground. And all the problems you see with like our rear foot and our lower leg moving wobbly aren't rear foot problems. Your forefoot's not doing its job steering. So my tripod is actually different. My tripod is outside ball of foot, inside ball of foot, and end of big toe, right?
Oh, I like that.
That's building the forefoot, and that's where your stability comes from. It's not from the heel, right? Your heel is like the codependent child, right? It's nice and it's important, but it's reflective of what happens up front, right? And so it's really building awareness of where you feel contact control in the forefoot that will guide everything upstream, right? Like arches.
Okay. And if that happens, sorry to interrupt, that if people tend to kind of overly, you know, if they're kind of grabbing, that's okay to have a little bit of a feeling of a grab, but not too much.
A little bit of a co-contraction is okay, but the dominance should be, again, outside ball of foot, inside ball of foot, and a big toe, not. Yes. So here's one thing you can do. If you're one of those people who does tend to kind of curl and grasp, right? Do me a favor. Curl and grasp your toes, and you'll see instantly the first thing that happens is the ball
lifts off
under your foot, of your big toe, it comes off the ground.
It comes off the ground, yeah.
That's right. So what you can do is a great little trick for this. Take a piece of TheraBand, not the band, right? And just anchor it like somewhere, right? Like a little like 2 foot piece, right? And pull a little bit of tension on that, right? So you can tie it on your coffee table if you want to, and just put that in the ground with like a little bit of tension and stand so that you've got that TheraBand anchored under the ball of the big toe, right? To give you a cue to get load over there, right? Because that, if you try and do your trick where you curl, that you'll first, you know, the ball of foot comes up and that TheraBand pops out, right? So it'll really teach you to get your weight over and to get that shift. And again, to learn to drive down. When I'm teaching my patients this, it sounds dumb, but I literally say these exact words because it works. I tell people there's a picture of my face right underneath the nail in your big toe. And I want you to smash my face, right? I don't want you to curl it. I want you to smash down on it, right?
Oh, I like that. I like that. Whether it was your face or not, but I think that's good. Right. Like it's a press. It's a press down. Right. It's not a curl back. Because I see people who do the claw thing and it's like that it's important to recognize the difference.
Yep.
Great. Okay. Now, I know you brought up the board and you're very humble, but you're an inventor. And I also worked for a patent. I haven't brought it to completion. It's a postural bra. And it's
nice.
Yeah. It's like, whatever, 6 years in the making. Cause it's like not, but because you know how this is, it's people come up with an idea. They're like, let's do it. And it's like, nope, it takes a while to get the patent and all that stuff. But what inspired you to create this board? Like, and what is the board about?
Yeah. So, again, like out of frustration, right? So I would have patients in the clinic and I do these things and all the cues we talked about, right? And they go home and they do things wrong because their lives are busy and I get it. They're not paying attention. And so these things get lost in translation. So I always thought like, hey, again, going back to what I said earlier, I want to put people in positions where they feel things and I can just shut my mouth, right? And so I said, would it be cool if I could build an environment to stick someone in, right? That would give them full foot contact because our sensory nervous system needs full foot contact. I want something that wasn't soft and squishy. I'm not going to go on a long tangent, but if you're training on soft, squishy surfaces, you're actually removing sensory information from your body to figure out where you are. I know it's done all the time. I know it's widespread. It's idiotic in my mind. You're literally taking away the proprioceptive cues you need to build proprioception, which is position sense. And I'll argue that till everybody. So we can turf that for later. But so I wanted to have something firm. I wanted to have it full foot contact. I wanted to have it tilt in a given amount of range of motion, right? And I wanted that range of motion to reflect the axis of pronation and supination. So the way MOBO tilts is in 45 degrees off the center, which is exactly the axis of pronation and supination. And then I wanted to have a cue to get load over underneath the big toe to think about how we build that progression line of center pressure under the foot. And what we wind up with in the world is MOBO, right? So it's a rocker board, right? It's not a wobble board. Wobble boards, I find, are actually too unstable. Not to say they're bad, but most people, they're so unstable. People just, again, they shift from the hip and not the foot. And I really want to give people that kind of right point of entry to build that foundational skill from the foot. So it rocks. It rocks in a limited motion, which is exactly how much your ankle your foot pronates and supinates. And it's actually safe in terms of range for people with an acute ankle sprain, right? And it trains all this in a load-bearing position, right? That's the thing. It's not just keeping your foot in the air and sweeping it side to side. We know you're eventually going to have to get to the point where you're supporting your own weight, right? So if you're early on a rehab, you can put one foot on a few books if you want to, and then your foot in the MOBO to kind of put 50% body weight, but you can get up to single leg body weight. You can do single leg plus weight, whatever you want to do. But we're talking about a different environment that's going to sort of, I use the word cue, but in reality, it's forcing you, right? To
think out,
feel how to do this the right way. And so it's nice. People say, is there a tool to build? Like, we have tools for different things. We have support bras, right? For posture awareness. We have, weights to load the system. And like, I didn't see any tools which really built that skill, not just the strength, but the skill of foot control. And
Do you have like a handout or video that takes people through the exercises to do on it?
Yeah, we have over 35 different exercises on moboboard.com.
3,500?
No, 35. No,
oh 35. My God. Oh, it's going, what? 35. 35 we can do. 3,500, no. That's going to overload our system.
But I tell people, like, take a look at those, even if you don't have a MOBO, right? Because I broke them up into little categories, right? But I call this 1 foot six pack up top, just whatever. But but those are just like, take a step back. Feel this stuff, right? Try to move differently. Try to pay attention to skill, right? And you kind of build those foundations. And the rest of the stuff after that, you want to train, some single leg squat mechanics? Great. Here's a bunch of different ways to do that and put your foot involved in that too. You want to build deadlift patterns? Great. Let's do that and put that in too. You're going to work some hip abduction? Great. So it's trying to, again, integrate things in a nice way. And I've just loved, my whole goal all along is see people be innovative. I love seeing exercises people create with it, right? Because different sports and different lifestyles have different demands. So make it reflective of that. But again, we're always integrating the foot stability with the whole body. And that's the key thing. It's like we need to, if it's not integrated, it doesn't work.
Yeah. Amen. Amen. Oh my gosh. I could talk to you all day. I love your enthusiasm. I love that you're putting this into kind of, real world situations. And like you said, getting integrative and paying attention to the quality. Movement has a quality to it. And that quality is what allows us to move well for decades. And even if you're in your 20s, and I know you probably aren't even thinking about even if you aren't experiencing anything and you aren't thinking for the future, it's going to help you in efficiency. It's going to help your recovery. It's going to help your nervous system, all of the things to really work on quality. So thank you for doing everything. Yeah. And where can people... Yeah, go ahead.
I can say one thing. So one of the things I do, because this struck me with something you asked earlier. One of the things I do with my patients when they come in and they say, hey, like, I'm here for whatever. I'm like, hey, how can I help you? Right. That's my job. But when it comes time, like, hey, here's what we have to do. I ask them point blank, how much time do you have available to integrate this into your lifestyle? Right. And so I think one of the things for any clinicians listening, we want to do so much to help them. And I ask them point blank, do I have 5 minutes a day, 10 minutes a day? Do I have 20 minutes for the whole week? Like I asked him, because I have to make our plan fit your life. So if you're to integrate what you just said, right? Wherever you are right now, think, how much time can I find throughout the week? It doesn't have to be 5 hours, people. Like, it's just real simple, right? But maybe it's 5 minutes a day. Maybe it's, you know, 10 minutes a week. I don't know. Find something and introduce this in, because again, it's not strengthening. It's just skill building. And you'll be shocked at how much better you feel and how different you feel by just taking some time to pull things back a little bit and go back to basics. It's really helpful.
I couldn't agree more, because at you're taking out some of the negative stress, like overuse or imbalance, or because we lose energy if we're not like well integrated. And then you're possibly putting on the good, because people, there is good stress. Good stress is actually going to help your nervous system. It's going to help you grow in every way, you know? So it's, I love that though, that you're asking that question. And sometimes when my teachers who go through my training and they see me do a private or something, I give them some examples. They're always shocked at how little we do, because I'm like, what I'm trying to do is like, if I can impart one nugget that they walk away with from this time, that's a win. If I give them a lot of stuff and they don't do any of it, then like that's not going to make any of us feel better. So right. I think that's, like you said, dial it back and but get clear and have good quality. So thank you for doing that. Tell everybody where they can find all your great information and this wonderful board you invented.
Yeah, I try and put things under, if you just go to moboboard.com, it's our website for the board. There's lots of stuff in there too. There's a whole like blog section. I've got different posts in there. You can also, on social media, you can follow mobo.board on Instagram. And then check out athletesbody.com. I've got some stuff on there. That blog has been going a little bit. I haven't updated it much, but I'm going to, because I'm about to release a whole series on youth athletic development really soon. So that'll be on my blog and also on YouTube too. So some fun things coming.
That's incredible. And it's really important to notice. I don't remember. I just read it, but you also have done a lot of research. Like it's like but research in real world stuff. And have written about that. So I think that's, and you have one book or two books?
Two books, Anatomy for Runners and Running Rewired.
I love it. Oh, well, thank you so much for joining me today, Jay. It was really a pleasure. I'm excited to dive into more of your stuff. And I really appreciate this for everybody out there. I'm sure there'll be lots of questions, so we might have to have you back.
Sure. Thanks for having me. And I hope everybody listening has an amazing day.
Yes. And you all know, as always, I am pulling for you.